So we started last week our series in the book of Ruth, the Old Testament book of Ruth. And I invite you, if you have your Bible with you, to go ahead and turn there with me. And if you don't, there may be a Bible sitting on one of the chairs close by. If you want to pick one of those up and follow along, that would be great too. I want to give you a little bit of the setting in case you weren't with us last week. Just so you know what's going on here in this story. Ruth is a short book, a short story, very dramatic, a string of events that happens here to this family, and some amazing pictures of God's grace and his power at work for his people. And that's why we're studying the book of Ruth right now. So I've got, just want to remind you of where we were last week. We had this family that was from Israel, but there was a famine in Israel. So Elimelech and Naomi and their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, they, because of the famine, they're living in Bethlehem, but they decide, you know, we've got to get out of here and we've got to go find a place where there's more food and where our family can be provided for. So the four of them leave and go across the Jordan River to the land of Moab, which is another nation. In the Old Testament, a lot of times the Israelites and the Moabites are not getting along well. So a little bit strange that they would choose to go there, but that's where they went. And while they are in Moab, Mahlon and Chilion find wives, Moabite women named Ruth and Orpah. That's not supposed to be Oprah. It is Orpah. That's the way it's spelled. So we've got this family, this extended family now, all living under the roof of Elimelech. They're all part of his household. But then, in the very first verses of the book of Ruth, we start seeing some tragedy happen in this family. First of all, Elimelech dies, and then after Elimelech dies, Mahlon and Chilion die. So all that's left here is Naomi, Ruth, and Orpah with no real bloodline connection to them. They're still in this family because of marriage, but kind of you're looking at it wondering, is this family going to fall apart? It's looking very bleak for Elimelech and for his family line at this point, which is something that's really important back in this culture. So we've got these three ladies that are together and they're not sure what to do. Naomi gets word that the famine is over in Israel, so she decides to set out back to her hometown of Bethlehem. And Ruth and Orpah set out along with her, and that's where we left it last week with Ruth. Chapter 1, verse 8, or verse 7, it says, with her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. So that was where we were last week. They started in Bethlehem, went to Moab, married and had the family tragedies, and now they're on their way back to Bethlehem. So this is where we pick up today in verse 8. The passage that Ernie read for us said, then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. So they've started this journey from Moab back to Bethlehem, and somewhere along the way, Naomi says, you know what? This is a really bad thing to pull Ruth and Orpah away from their families, from their people, from everything they've known in their entire lives. They've never lived in Bethlehem. They don't have any connections here, no family here. Why am I going to pull them all the way from their home so that they can stay with me? So they stop, and Naomi says, wait a minute. I'm thankful for all you've done, but it's probably a better idea for you to turn around and just go back to your families, go back to your people. You'll be much better off there. But she says, thank you for your kindness there in verse 8. He says, Naomi says, may the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. Hugely important word there in this passage and in the book of Ruth as well. Sometimes when we use the word kindness, it doesn't really mean all that much. You know, if you're walking into the hardware store and you see a lady walking in a couple steps behind you and you hold the door open and she may say, thank you, kind sir. And she's like, well, thank you for holding the door open. Is that the kind of kindness that's being talked about here? You might think that. You might get that impression. But the reality is that there is something much deeper and much bigger going on here with this word kindness as it's used here and in other places in the book of Ruth. It's the Hebrew word hesed. And you're like, oh, well, now that you told me that, now everything makes sense and I understand, right? Hebrew word hesed. You know what that means, right? You can read that? Probably not. So I made it in English. There you go. There's a transliteration for you. Here's hesed. Kindness is one of the ways that this word is translated. Also love in different places. Really important word in the Old Testament as well. And one of the difficult things about hesed is that it's hard to translate with just one word. Kindness is the word your translations use. Some of your other translations will use different words. But I wanted to try to lay out for you a little bit of the depth of meaning of this word and how important it is. So I've got some help in here. We're going to start off with kindness is one of the possible meanings of hesed. It's not just being nice to someone for a moment, but a continual, faithful being kind and showing that by your actions. Going above and beyond the call of duty is one of the meanings of kindness. Let's see another one. Here is love. Sometimes the word hesed is just simply translated love. In fact, that's probably the most common translation of this. But once again, it's not just an emotional type love. It's not just a simple explanation of love. It's a deep, grounded, anchored love that is permanent and is not wavering. Another word translations use sometimes is, can you see that one? I know it's a little small. It's a long word. Loving kindness. I believe the King James Version and some other translations use this at different places for hesed, and that kind of works well because it's putting together love and kindness, that you can't fit all of love and all of kindness in this word, so we're going to put two words together. So loving kindness, it's a kindness that stems from a deep emotion and a deep tie to someone else. So there's loving kindness there. I didn't know if these were going to stand up or not. Yeah, we're getting close. There we go. Here we go. Let's see what else do we have. Mercy. Hesed is sometimes translated as mercy. One famous verse that a lot of you will know, if you remember in Psalm 23, verse 6, surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. That's hesed. That's God's goodness and his graciousness to his people. Even though we don't deserve it, God has mercy on us. So mercy is another meaning of hesed. And we're just kind of here. Yeah. There, I'll put it down there. Nope, that's going to fall down there too. Should have thought this out better, right? Here, unfailing love. That's another aspect of the love that it's, like I said before, that it's anchored and it's permanent. It's unfailing. It's not, you don't have to worry, is it going to be there tomorrow or next week or next year? You know, a lot of human relationships are supposed to be that way. And we see, you've seen in your lives, the personal tragedies when a kind of love that's supposed to be a permanent covenant kind of love is taken away and is not permanent the way it was supposed to be. So unfailing love is one good thing to know about God and his care for us. Unfailing love. Then we have faithfulness, again, tying the idea into permanence and goodness as well. So you've got all of these different aspects of the word hesed. Get tangled up in my wire here. Oh, I got a couple more here too. Loyalty. Loyalty is another good one. And here I put a little sentence here. Here's what some of the Bible dictionaries say about hesed. It says it refers to acts of devotion and loving kindness that go beyond obligation. Another way you could say it is free acts of rescue or deliverance. So hesed means that it's going beyond what is owed to somebody. You may say, well, you know, God made a covenant with his people, so he owes them some good things. But hesed is what's going above and beyond that. You may owe somebody just regular politeness or kindness or doing nice things, treating them the way that you would want to be treated. But hesed goes above and beyond and even far beyond that. It's an extravagant, permanent, anchored kind of love and goodness and faithfulness and kindness that's all wrapped in together in this word hesed. So I want you to think about that when we read verse 8. And Naomi says to her two daughters-in-law, go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and me. In other words, Naomi and Orpah have shown a greater amount of kindness than their husbands even deserved. Not only did they show them kindness in marrying them and remaining married to them, but also after their deaths, they stayed with their families to make sure that they were taken care of and to be continually with them, possibly to hopefully see the family line continue in some kind of way. Let me show you a few other verses where Hesed appears in the Old Testament to give you a feel for how these things are coming together. In Exodus, the first couple of chapters of the Bible, I underlined it there. It's translated love. And he passed in front of Moses, proclaiming, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in Hesed, abounding in love and faithfulness. So this is God's character, to be abounding in this kind of faithful, covenant, loyal love for his people. Here's another one. In Numbers 14, the Lord is slow to anger, abounding in love, in Hesed, forgiving sin and rebellion. In accordance with your great Hesed, forgive the sin of these people. So the forgiveness of sin is tied into God's extravagant, abundant, free, merciful love for his people. That's a common phrase in the Old Testament. The Lord is slow to anger, abounding in Hesed. It's tied in with his very character, that God is a God of this Hesed kind of love. All right? Here's another one from, oops, went too far. There we go. Deuteronomy 7, 9. Know therefore that the Lord your God is God. He is the faithful God, keeping his covenant of Hesed to 1,000 generations of those who love him and keep his commandments. Micah 7, 18. Who is a God like you who pardons sin and forgives the transgression of the remnant of his inheritance? You do not stay angry forever, but delight to show mercy. You delight to show Hesed to your people. You don't stay angry forever. This one's there's Psalm 23, 6 we talked about earlier. Surely goodness and mercy, goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life. Jonah 2, 8. Y'all remember being in Jonah a little while back, right? You remember this verse 2:8? Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's Hesed for them. And if that's not an eye-opening verse with all of that we've been talking about before, I mean, who wouldn't want to be a recipient and actively engaged in receiving Hesed from God, this covenant faithful kind of love? But what Jonah 2:8 tells us is that it's possible, even though God has Hesed and this is his character, for us to turn away from him toward idols. And back in that day, it would have been little carvings of stone or wood or other things possibly. In our day, we don't usually have those kinds of things, but we have lots of other idols that we turn to in our lives that we worship and idolize more than God himself. So it's eye-opening that we can, in our lives, turn away from God and turn to these worthless idols that don't save and can't answer when we call to them. And what it says is that we turn away from God's Hesed when we do that. We love talking about the fact that God is love and that God loves everyone. And that is absolutely true. That's part of his character. But you can live your life in such a way that you take yourself out and you don't experience any of that. Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's Hesed for them. Psalm 36, 5, your Hesed, your love, O Lord, reaches to the heavens. Your faithfulness to the skies. There's a limitless supply of God's Hesed. And one more, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His love, his Hesed, endures forever. And throughout Psalm 136, that refrain is after each verse. His love endures forever. His love endures forever. This is the character of God himself, being loving, good, faithful, unfailing love, mercy, loving kindness, which break up into love and kindness together. You put all that in a box. I got one more up here. And all of that is God's Hesed for humanity. His extravagant, free, merciful, faithful love for us. And here's the really interesting thing about what's happening in this passage is that Naomi is the one from Israel. She's a member of God's chosen people back in the Old Testament, right? And it's these foreign women, these Moabite women who are showing the character of God and demonstrating the character of God to Naomi in her own life. You remember what she says? Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me." So Naomi wishes them the kindness of God to be showered down in their lives, just as they have shown her kindness. Just an amazing picture of God's free and extravagant love for us and for his people, that it's actually a part of his character. And we're going to see how that plays out a little bit more in this passage as we go. Here's our outline for this morning. First thing I wanted you to see here in verse 8 is the weight of kindness. That God's kindness and his kindness reflected in the actions of other people are so important in this life. And a question that we can always ask is that kind of kindness being reflected in your own life? Are you, when people are around you, are they seeing the kindness of God that he has shown to you in many times in your own life? Are they seeing that in you, or what they seeing mainly in you, your obligation of saying please and thank you and politeness, what general society tells us how we ought to act? You know, please pass the ketchup. You know, that's not chesed. Do people in your life see you going above and beyond this kind of extravagant, incredible love and kindness toward other people? That's what we see in Ruth's life, and be something I would commend to you today. She goes on in verse 9, "May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." So this is Naomi's answer. You've shown kindness. You have already gone above and beyond whatever could have been asked for. And now I want you to go back home, now that you've done that, and I want you to carry on with your life. I want you to do what you need to do to become a part of a family and make sure your needs are taken care of, that you're protected, and all these kinds of things. It was a dangerous time in the history of the world to be a single woman. It was dangerous. You weren't sure if your needs were going to be provided for. Lots of different issues with that. So she wanted them to go back to their own parents' home and then eventually find new husbands. She kissed them goodbye and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." So even after all that they've been through, losing Elimelech, losing Mahlon, Chilion, they've been through so much together, and they say, you know, we've been through so much together, it means more for me to be able to go back to Bethlehem with you than it does for all of my family and all of my friends and everybody before. I want to go with you, is what Ruth and Orpah say. But Naomi doesn't want that. She appreciates the gesture, but she says, "Return home, my daughter." She says it again in verse 12, "Return home." And then in about halfway through verse 13, she says, "No, my daughters." Very poetic language there that's being used. Sounds very repetitious in the original Hebrew. Just to drive home the impact. Here's her argument. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me. That's what Naomi says. That's her argument. And Orpah says, okay, you're right. There doesn't seem to be any future for me in Bethlehem. I'm going to go back to my people. That's what she says in verse 14. "As at this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her," which is a really amazing thing for Ruth to cling to her after all of this, after everything she's been through, after this seems like a pretty true argument that there's no future for you, Ruth, back in Bethlehem. Ruth continues to cling to Naomi. Verse 15, "Look," Naomi said, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and to her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth won't do it. That's our second point. They're deciding between good things. Here's what we have, is we have two women, Ruth and Orpah, who have both done amazingly kind, loving things for their mother-in-law at this point. They've both gone above and beyond the call of duty already. And so the narrator of the book of Ruth doesn't give us any indication that he looks down on Orpah for turning around and going back home. It makes sense in a lot of ways. like I said, she's already shown kindness. She's already shown chesed. She's already gone above and beyond the call of duty. So I'm not looking down at Orpha at all. But what I am doing is seeing a doubly powerful testimony of God's grace and his kindness in Ruth that says, no, it doesn't matter about my future. It doesn't matter the cost to me. I'm going to go on back to Bethlehem with you, Naomi. We are going to live life together. We are going to look after each other. We are going to help. We're going to be a comfort to one another through all the tragedy we've been through. So Orpha, she didn't make a bad choice. I mean, ultimately in this situation, you're in this one of those situations where there is no good choice because there's been such tragic events that have happened already. It's like you don't really want to call either one of them a good choice, but I'm talking about from a moral perspective. Both choices that they could have made at this point would have been good choices. Neither one would have been sinful. Neither one of them would have gone against God's plan or his will. God's not going to be angry at either choice that's made here. There's two good decisions. But what we see here is that God's character and his purposes are made known that much better when somebody goes above and beyond the call of duty to show kindness and love. So here's kind of the challenge to us. There are lots of times in life when we are faced with decisions, and they're both perfectly moral, fine decisions to make. I could either go to the left or I could go to the right, and neither one is sinful. Either one's fine for me to make. One of them may be a high cost to me, and it may be a lot of personal sacrifice, and it may be that this is the one that would actually show God's character better to the people around me, be a testimony to the world. The other one, there's nothing wrong with it. It's a little bit easier. May not do as much good as far as sharing the gospel and making God's character known, but like I said, nothing wrong with it at all. But what we see in this passage is a strong recommendation to put yourself out there and to do whatever it costs, whatever it takes, to make the covenant, extravagant love and character of God known, even if it costs you a lot. Be like Ruth is my encouragement today. Like I said, I got nothing bad to say about Orpha. There are hundreds of Christians, thousands, millions of Christians every day who take the path of Orpha. They don't really do much wrong, but they don't really go out of their way to do what God has called them to do. And that's where I want to push you toward. I want to encourage you to be like Ruth, and regardless of the cost, I'm going to make God known. I mean, this is kind of one of the things that maybe you're here today and you've gotten some bad ideas about what Christianity is really all about. Because sometimes we get the idea that Christianity is mainly about a bunch of rules to follow and a bunch of things not to do. Well, you can do all those rules. You can do all those things and still just be like Orpha and fall far short of what God is really calling us to in his word, of extravagant love and sacrifice and faithfulness to other people. Christianity is not a list of do's and don'ts. In fact, if that's all it is in your own mind, then I would submit that you have completely missed the entire point of the Bible, the entire point of Jesus and his life here. The point of Jesus is to make much of God the Father and his character, and so that you can be wrapped up in this whole entire drama throughout human history that says God and his greatness is worthy of praise, and that's where we get our highest joy in this life, is by making much of him. And Ruth gets to play along because she says, I don't care what it costs me. I'm going to go. And this speech by Ruth is an incredible speech. I hope it grabbed your attention while Ernie was reading it earlier. Verse 16, look at that. But Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you will die, I will die. There I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. And then Naomi realizes Ruth is determined to go. What kind of determination is this? What kind of devotion and allegiance? It's incredibly powerful when you see this in another person. And this is a perfect example of a covenant kind of chesed love. It says, I don't care what's going on outside. It doesn't matter the difficulty of the situation. I'm going to stick through it with you. We are going to go through this together. Incredibly compelling in what Ruth does. Sometimes these passages are read at weddings, and I think that's a good illustration, because a wedding is supposed to be the time of society coming together and saying this kind of covenant love is now existing between these two people that is going to be faithful, and there's going to be no getting in and out of it. It's these two people tying their lives together permanently for the rest of their lives. May the Lord deal with me ever so severely if anything but death separates us. That's what marriage is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a picture of Hesed kind of covenant faithful love. And so it's perfectly appropriate to read these kinds of things at wedding. But one of the things that I want you to really see here is the powerful nature of Naomi when she is making this kind of commitment. Because when we get to the New Testament, this is the kind of commitment that Jesus is going to say his followers have to make. He says, if anyone starts to follow me, puts his hand to the plow, and then looks back over his shoulder, he's not worthy of following me. He says, you may have to leave your family. You may have to leave father and mother and sister and brother in order to follow me. If anyone wants to come after me, he must take up his cross and follow me. And that's what Jesus calls people to who are going to follow him. And when he says, take up your cross and follow me, that's a serious condition that he's given there. The cross is an instrument of execution. He's saying, it may cost you your life to follow me. Know it, getting into it, and be ready for it. That's why what we're going to do here in a little while is really such a big deal, even though to us in our culture, it may not seem like that big of a deal, being baptized. There are some cultures where if you are baptized, you're ostracized from your family. Sometimes you fear for your life. Your property's confiscated because you've left whatever religion or no religion that you grew up with, and you've said publicly, I'm going to follow Jesus. And this is the kind of thing that Jesus says, if you're going to be my disciple, if you're going to be my follower, you need to have that kind of commitment and be ready for it. It makes me think, in fact, I printed up a news article and left it in my office. I didn't bring it with me, but it was about some of the terrorist activity that's going on in Iraq. You heard that the terrorist group went into a village and massacred 80 men just a couple days ago because they refused to convert to Islam. And the people that were massacred were the Yazidi group, which, and I'm not claiming that they're a Christian group. They seem to be a mix of a lot of different religions put together. So I'm not making that connection there that these are Christians that are being persecuted, but they are a religious group that's being persecuted at pains of death. They said, if you don't convert, you're going to be killed. And they were. And you read those news reports, and it's ghastly. It's terrible, horrible tragedy that we need to be praying for. And when we have an opportunity to speak out and to raise awareness for those kind of things, I would encourage you to do that. But one of the things that I think we need to realize and think about is such a sobering thought in that situation is, what if someone were to come into our village and say, convert to something else besides Jesus or die? And we're going to kill everybody we can get our hands on. Is that the kind of commitment that you feel like you've made to Jesus? He's serious when he says, take up your cross and follow me. What good does it do anyone to gain the whole world but forfeit your soul? Jesus says, be willing to give up even your very life in order to follow me. And that's what Ruth is willing to do here. She's willing to give up her life, her hope, and very little chance of seeing her family ever again, in order to continue showing Hesed covenant faithful love to Naomi. And you know, this story, it reminds me of another story. Because what's going on with Ruth here? She's left and she's on her way to Bethlehem. And the reality of the situation, that this is not going to be easy, there's going to be a lot of sacrifice here, is really starting to set in. And she's had somebody say, wait a minute, are you sure you really want to do this? And she said, yeah, I'm ready. I'm determined to go. It reminds me of somebody else that was on his way to Bethlehem. You know, there was a second person of the Trinity, the Son of God, who was worshipped by angels, lived in a place of absolute perfection. And one day God the Father said, "You're going on your way to Bethlehem. There's a stable there, a manger. You're going to be born. There's going to be some sacrifice involved. It's not going to be an easy thing. You sure you don't want to turn back?" And Jesus said, "I'm determined to go. Because God's people need to be shown chesed, covenant love. For God loved the world in this way, he gave his one and only Son, that all those that believe in him would not perish but have eternal life." The love, the chesed of God, is shown to us most clearly in the cross, but in small measure also in Ruth and her commitment to her mother-in-law, Naomi. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women exclaimed, "Could this be Naomi? The homecoming's here." That's where we'll be next week. Hope you can be back with us for that. But here's what I want you to leave with. God pursues us. He is determined to make known his chesed. And remember what Jonah said? Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love. Don't turn away from God's love today. Don't turn away from his chesed, covenant, kindness, faithful, loyal love. That's who he is. Don't turn away from him. Turn toward him this morning. That's my encouragement for you. I'm going to pray in just a moment. After that, we're going to sing a couple songs together, a couple more worship songs. And during that time, me and those folks that are going to be baptized today, Nathan, Tony, Debbie, you guys can head backstage and get ready and get changed for that. After y'all sing, we'll be up there in the baptistry. There may be some areas of the worship center over here that you can't see the baptistry well. If you need to move over, don't feel bad about that. Feel free to do that. I want everybody to be able to see and celebrate together. I also believe some of our kids from Kids Church and maybe some from Worship Care are going to be coming down to help celebrate these baptisms with us today as well. All right, let me pray before we sing together. Father, we thank you for your kindness. Not only do we not deserve it, but you have gone above and beyond. Every day, we see glimpses of your mercy. They're new every morning. Air to breathe, the sun that rises, food to eat, family and friends to fill our lives with love, and even at times, giving us glimpses of your character, which we're so thankful for. But God, I pray that you would also remind us that all of these things are but just a shadow of the goodness and the glory that awaits those that will be covered by your chesed for all eternity. And I pray that if there's anyone here today who hasn't yet turned to Christ and knows your love, that you would draw them and call them to yourself this morning. That you would let them know about your goodness and your kindness and your fierce loyalty that you have. God, we thank you for it. We worship you today. We praise your name. Your love endures forever. Surely goodness and mercy will follow us all of the days of our lives, and we will dwell in your house forever. God, we rejoice and give you praise for your chesed, covenant love, and faithfulness. God, be with us now as we sing. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.